In 1976, I took over editorship of the Lay Hunter
journal,
and the buzz at the time was that there were strange energies at Saich. So I invited papers to the journal for people to write about research into ancient Saich energies. What did come through was really just people's opinions, what they thought. There was no actual research. So I instigated a meeting in 1977. It was agreed to set something up, called it the Dragon Project, in reference to the dragon image of China for telluric current. We set it up, we got a small grant, and we had subscriptions from very trusty Lay Hunter readers. We wanted a field site where we could conduct long-term work, and we chose the Rollwright Stones. It's a fascinating site. There's a tremendous body of folklore associated with it. We had done some work which indicated that stone circles in the British Isles are very near or on geological fault lines, and that intrigued us from an energy possibility. Indeed, at the bottom of the field over there, there is the Rollwright Fault that just runs by. One circle, one fault line. We'd done an aerial survey, and we had seen one of the old prehistoric tracks that runs up past the Whispering Knights and up onto the Ridgeway here, flying over, and the crop marks were very, very visible on that time that we flew over. And we set up a lot of monitoring. We had to decide what we were going to look at. You can't just monitor everything. And so we listened to anecdotes, what people told us, experiences people had had, and then said, well, what could they be in terms of energies we could measure or monitor? We went for various things. Ultrasound was one, which was a curious one. Infrared photography, magnetic monitoring, and radioactivity. These are all natural energies that zip around us all the time, and we wanted to see if there were any anomalous occurrences of these energies. And we set about it, a motley crew, over many years, with people staying here day and night. We had one three-month session that was 24 hours, round-the-clock monitoring for 3 months. We monitored the whole area. We couldn't get data, for example, on radiation. What is, you know, there's natural radioactivity of coming from the ground and coming down as secondary particles through the atmosphere and all the rest. And we wanted to know, were there any detailed data on this? And they're not. Not at the fine tuning that we needed. So we had to set up monitoring stations all around this area for 3 months to find out what a standard background was. Because unless you know background, you can't determine anomalies. In fact, there are no real radiation anomalies here, except in the road. There's a 100-yard stretch of the road here that is about five times above the background radiation count. And that's nothing to do with ancient sites. It's to do, presumably, with the sort of hardcore packing underneath the road. But what is interesting, while we were monitoring here at all hours of the day and night and all seasons, all weathers, a number of people would report to me, who had been working here for several days, I saw something strange on the road here. And then somebody else, some completely other person who didn't know the other person, said, I saw something strange on the road here. And we found that in that 100-yard length, we had reports of cars with occupants that disappeared, like driving along, suddenly weren't there anymore, old-fashioned gypsy caravans appearing and disappearing, and even by, who's now a well-known archaeologist, who was sitting here in a van, eating his jam butty or whatever it was, when a very large hairy animal walked by, and he said it had coarse grey hair. And he went by and he thought, God, what can that be? And he looked out and there was nothing there. So there were appearances and disappearances, very vivid, but very brief, very transient, on this stretch of road here. None of those people knew it was radioactive. We did, because we'd monitored it time and again. We took samples, the samples were tested on the road surface, nothing unusual. But we subsequently found on the Dragon Project that in areas of heightened natural background radiation, it happened in some of the granite stone chambers in Cornwall, people will get very vivid waking dreams, if I can put it that way. Transient hallucinations that could either blot out what they were actually looking at, just or would add some element to the scene they were looking at. And it's a whole area, never been further investigated, but it's something we noticed. But we didn't pick up any radiation anomalies here. We picked up some ultrasonic or apparent ultrasound anomalies, and we definitely picked up magnetic anomalies. The ultrasound, very confused, we never really got to the end of it. I was never totally happy, and this is why I've never reported it in any depth. I was never totally happy that all the instrumentation was kosher, because monitoring equipment can be affected by damp and rain, and by God, we had all the weathers imaginable. But in 1987, quite a bit after the main body of the Dragon Project physical monitoring, on the tall stone over there, we definitely got an ultrasound reading coming out of the middle meter deep band, if you can think of that, around the stone in all directions. And it lasted just over an hour, and then it just went, and we've never picked it up again. But it was definitely coming out of the stone. Now, whether that was heterodyning, some sort of military communications or whatever, I just don't know what it was, but it was definitely there. Magnetic stones, we've picked up some along here with magnetometers, low level, very low level stuff, but normally they give a nice, smooth, even gradient. But on one occasion, again for about an hour and a half on a summer's afternoon, one of the stones here just went completely berserk, up and down, something was happening within it, but we have no idea what. But from the work we did here, we branched out and we've looked at sites throughout the British Isles, we've looked at sites in the USA, in Egypt, and also in France and one or two other places. And we've built up a sort of consensus view of certain types of anomaly. And what we found were that apart from subtle magnetic changes, some rocks, the stone circles, have gross magnetic anomalies in them. There's nothing mysterious about it. It's sort of iron content in the stones and so forth, but they are really strong. They'll spin a compass, and they are usually in very specific spots on a stone circle or in an alignment. And people say, well, how could there be anything like this in prehistory? People didn't have instrumentation and so on. But there's in fact a very good body of data now developing that people can have a natural sensitivity to magnetic field changes. And I was recently over in Canada with Professor Michael Persinger, who studies the effect of magnetic field changes on the brain. And he actually can produce visions and other sort of effects in people by changing magnetic fields at the same sort of levels as the magnetic fields we measured around some of the standing stones. And they're linked with diet and with all sorts of other things that can enhance that sort of effect. We also had dowsers and psychics. We did the mind stuff here as well. And I got to tell you, it wasn't very consistent, the results we got there. But that's the sort of thing we did. And it was intermittent work from, we got going in 1978 properly. And intermittently then through into the sort of mid-late 1980s with one or two sporadic monitoring attempts at various sites into the 90s. The most complete record of those results are in Places of Power that I wrote in 1990 and I just had a recent edition. But it was sporadic. We were very poorly funded, very much a pilot study. I came away with two distinct impressions. One is that a lot of the talk about energies at sites, and that is just crap, quite honestly. It's just a belief system that's regenerated by people who don't actually do research. The other aspect was that there are possible specific energy effects that may possibly have had some use in a ritual context, such as magnetic field change and so on. But we now know that early peoples and traditional peoples, peoples in the rainforest or wherever, were very, very well informed about their botanical environment. Exactly what every leaf, bark, blade of grass, whatever it could do in a medicinal sense, in a ritual sense, how it could change consciousness and so on. And my guess is that they were equally acutely aware of their, what we would call their geophysical environment. They would know about fault lines, for example, by the energy changes that occur there. And also by phenomena that occur, such as balls of light, anomalous light phenomena, earth lights, whatever you want to call them. And I think they are, we actually know of at least four or five sites around the world that were specifically built because people saw unusual light phenomena there and interpreted them as gods, spirits, bodhisattvas or whatever, depending on the culture. And I'm pretty sure they were tuned into their geophysical environment just as much as they were to their botanical, natural environment. And that was the overall impression I personally brought out of the Dragon Project. Subsequent to that, we've been doing a long-term dream project at four sites, three in Cornwall, one in Wales, where we've been gathering hundreds of dreams from many, many different volunteers, because we wanted to see if certain places would yield a certain patterns in dream consciousness. It's been a hell of a job. The results, we've got books of dreams from sites. They're being analysed by the Saybrook Institute in San Francisco, Stanley Krippner, who is a past master of this sort of stuff. We're a little bogged down through lack of funds at the moment, so we're trying to raise funding. But it's been going for 10 years, and it'll be a very interesting project, whatever the result. You asked about the geographic properties. Well, it's worth noticing that from Uffington Whitehorse through this site to Brails Hill, which is a local landmark and has all sorts of legends associated with it and ghost paths going from it and so on in the local folklore, is an absolutely true meridian. And that was surveyed by Roy Cooper, who was one of the early helpers on the Dragon Project, later became one of its trustees, and who is by trade a surveyor. The stone we were looking at over there with the flat side, it's got a ruddy complexion. It's got a ruddy complexion because some little tow rags about a decade ago built a fire by it and cracked it. And the stone had to be taken away, repaired and was put back.